Hi, this is Naeem Hassan, and welcome to the Olympic Mindset Podcast. So I was reflecting on our role as individuals and realizing that we serve two primary functions or two primary roles in our life, that of the leader and that of a follower. And the thoughts that I had surrounding both of those positions of responsibility, we'll start off with the follower. And when I think of follower, I think of support. I think of contribution. I think of what we bring to the world and what we give to our communities, our families, and probably more importantly, what we invest and give to ourselves so that we can be the best that we are capable of being so that we can do the absolute best for those that depend on us and rely on our support. And the principles that come to mind when I think about that role is obedience, and tolerance, and courteous, kindness, honesty, and dependability. Because when we are being in the support role, folks hope to look back and see that you are there when you say you're going to be there and deliver on what you say. Because they're counting on us to be that. They're counting on us to be the best that we can be so that when they need our help, we are there for them with no question. It is automatic. It is a guarantee. It is never a question in their mind whether we are going to show up and be present as we have committed to being as the follower, as a contributor. So it's a very important role. It's one of those powerful dual roles that we have, and we also need to be reminded that there's never a time when we can't be that. Because the moment we make that choice to not show up because we don't feel like it, or because we can't see the value in doing that work, I think that's the moment we put in motion a series of events that will lead to an outcome that we may not want. So being a supporter, being a contributor becomes a very, very critical responsibility that we embrace and we live and we be. The other role that we assume is that of the leader. And see, leadership is not about telling people what to do, in my perspective. Leadership is about how you show up in your life. It's about what I've learned from other leaders and folks that you look up to and inspired to be with, be like, and there's some fundamental principles. Discipline, determination, dedication. Because those are the principles that you begin to invest in yourself so that you can become the best that you can possibly be. And that takes work. See, because it becomes less about telling someone what to do and more about being an example. See, because if you had a problem to solve and someone presented you with potential solutions to solving that problem, you would want to make sure that the examples and the instructions they gave you were correct examples. Because if there's a flaw in the example, the likelihood of getting the correct answer, well, we already know that answer. And so if that is what we show up and we are, examples, then we need to be the correct example. And we need to practice discipline in our life, determination in our life, dedication in our life, so that people can see what that example looks like and it becomes easier to follow the step-by-step approach. And it's not one of these situations where we've seen happen, do as I say and not as I do. That doesn't work. I've seen that. And as a young person growing up, I became an observer. Like, not thinking I'm getting drunk and driving and acting a fool. Because then next thing you know, they're getting stopped by the police. They're having a confrontation with someone. Somebody gets hurt. Somebody goes to jail. I've seen that scenario play out many times over the years. And as a young person watching those examples, realizing that that example doesn't help me get the answer that I want. So we are going to find another example. And that's the role we play as leaders. That's the role that we play in our life. And then the other part of that, two other principles I know that come to mind would be this idea called consistency. See, because we hear that often and we wonder, how come we're not getting the results that we think we want? Well, I've come to an understanding that consistency is not the problem. You see, the problem is awareness. And the example I like to think about is the fact that when we look at time, this continuum from A to Z, time is always moving. Two things are going to happen as time moves. We are going to do what we say, or we are going to fill up that time doing something else. In either case, time is moving and we are doing something. It reminds me of the thought that there is never a nothing. There is always something. And if we aren't conscious about what our somethings are, we are going to put in motion a series of events that is going to lead to an outcome that we may not want based on our unconscious activities. So we talk about consistency. It's about doing what you say, monitoring the crazy talk, the talk that says, oh, I don't feel like doing it today because, and you fill in the blanks of all the long laundry list of reasons why we say we can't, because we're not the right color, the right size, right shape. I don't have the money. I don't have the time. I don't have the resources. You know the story. We all play the story at some point, but how that story impacts each one of us might be different. See, because I've learned over the years that when I'm striving, when I was striving for things like national championships, how I felt didn't matter. Because if the day was the day to get out and run, you got a choice. You stay in bed or you get up and run. But one thing is for certain, you're not going to call the U.S. Olympic Committee and say, hey, guys, check this out. You know, the trials that are coming up in a month or so, I'm not sure if I'm going to be ready. So can you push the date out another month? That'll give me a little more time. And what do you think the likelihood of that happening? Right? Not happening. So then it's my responsibility, regardless of how I feel, get up, look at my schedule, put my clothes on, and get my butt moving. That's my job. And one of the things I've learned over the years in that pursuit over 14 years of and 7 national championships and two silver and four gold medals, or four silver medals in all of my national level competition. It didn't matter how bad I felt. I had some amazing workouts on days that I told myself I felt like crap. And that's when I come to realize, bro, you can't believe that story, because that story is not a real story. It sounds real because it's producing a real response in your body called a stress response, but the story is not real. So once you get moving, put your clothes on, keep walking and talking, the feeling changes, the story changes. On one of those days, I started having this conversation, worked all day like a lot of folks do, come home, time to get dressed and go run, because that's the only time I have on this particular day. And asked my fiance at the time to, okay, drive a mile and park. So we headed up Gleason, Northeast Portland. She drove a mile, I ran to her, still whining and complaining about how I didn't feel like doing what I was out there to do. I've got the Olympic trials coming in, and I'm crying about I don't feel like working out today. So she drove another mile. And this continued. The conversation continued. I don't feel like it. My legs are sore. My back is stiff. My calves are tight because I stood all day at work. I didn't feel like it. Another mile. We're at about 82nd. Now I'm a little warm. Muscles are starting to relax, and now I'm in tune with other things that are happening in the environment besides the story in my head. She drives another mile. Now we're 4 miles in. Now I'm warm and the adrenaline flowing. I'm feeling pretty good at this point. And I just say, go. Conversation shifts. I'm listening to the rhythm of my body, the rhythm of the shh, 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 from my arms hitting the jacket that I was wearing, and the rhythm of my feet hitting the pavement, and the splash of tires as they drive through the rain. Shh, shh, shh. And the reflection of the red and the green lights as they hit the pavement. Now I've shifted into kind of a meditative state. And the adrenaline flowing, I'm feeling pretty good. And this continues. So when it was all said and done, I'm at Mount Hood Community College from where I started, which was about 14 miles later. On a day when I didn't feel like running. It was at that moment I realized that this story is a powerful story. But it produces a feeling that's not real. It's like the boogeyman. And it's like all the other fears sometimes that we manufacture for ourselves because we have a physical response to the story and we think the story is true. Other examples, you go to the movie theater, you watch a movie and you're frightened, and then you have to realize that you parked your car a block away under some trees around the corner and it's dark. And now you need an escort because you're scared. Real or imaginary? Well, I shared that story with someone from a city where there seems to be more violence than in Portland, and that story could be a real story. But in this case, it was not real. It's our imagination thinking that Freddy Krueger is going to be waiting around the corner for us to whack our knees off. That's probably not going to happen. So that's the power of the story, and that's the power of that influences our ability to be consciously consistent, because we get caught up in that story. And it immobilizes us. The other principle I want to talk about is probably equally as important in this concept called patience, because we hear that all the time. You got to be patient. Just be patient. It's going to work out. Be patient. And then I start thinking about that concept. Why is it difficult to be patient? Why is it difficult to wait? And it's difficult because we're not learned how to do that. We're not taught how to be patient. We say be patient, but patient isn't something that you learn to be. You have to learn how to do patience before you can be patient. And how do we do that? And it's about how we begin to discipline our thinking in a structured kind of way. Because if your thoughts are not disciplined and structured, they are random and all over the board. And you and I know that when we look at our penal system and folks that are in there, and I'm just telling you from what I've seen on TV, right? I've never been there, and I've talked to folks who've been incarcerated. One of the things that happens is if you are in there and you have a problem and they separate you from the general population and put you in solitary or isolation. And then I start thinking later, well, why is that a form of punishment? And it ties back to this this idea that if we aren't disciplined in our thinking, if we don't have a structured way to do time as time passes, we can drive ourselves crazy with our own undisciplined thoughts, which is why solitary confinement becomes an amazing form of punishment. Or any of those isolation kinds of things that research has shown. We drive ourselves crazy because we don't know what to do with our thoughts. They're not structured. So being patience requires that we learn how to do patience, which is structuring our thinking. And how do we do that? Well, depends on where you are. If you're in church, let's read the scripture. If you're at school or in some other environment, You read uplifting, powerful stories that gives your mind something to do while you are in this waiting phase. And it becomes very intentional. It's not an accident. And the better you get at it, the easier it gets. The more you do it, the easier it gets. And you find that being with yourself by yourself is not torture. Very enjoyable. It induces a sense of relaxation. We call that a relaxation response versus a stress response. And you find yourself talking yourself into a state of peacefulness. But that's work. You don't get to just do that without practice. That's why it becomes intentional. I carry a book with me. It has poems. I read the poems to the point that I memorize the poems. And I read stories and I read articles and read other things about other inspiring people, not to memorize their story, but to be inspired by the story, which stimulates a thought process in my mind that's probably more important to me than regurgitating their story, because their story is their story. I don't need to memorize their story. I need to be inspired to know my story. That's what I'm going to remember. That's how I approach that. So you ask me a bunch of history about folks, I probably don't know about a bunch of history because I don't read it to recite it that way. I read it to be inspired so that I can know my history. That's the value I find in that information. So that when I'm with myself, by myself, I can be okay with that. So as I conclude, as leaders, as followers, we have to know that both roles are important. We have to protect the integrity of the folks that we are in front of, and know that the examples that we are being in our life is impacting other folks because we are the example. And we have to make sure that we're the right example so that folks can get the right answer if we are the example they're following. And that becomes a tremendous obligation to all of us. And I think if we approach our life perhaps from more of that perspective, then we get our egos out of the way. Because you become both a leader and a follower, and a leader and a follower. Thank you.